idea, and carried his dream to as many of the courts of Europe as would receive him. He also enlisted the aid of influential Jewish financiers whenever, and wherever he could find them. Impressed with his sincerity, the British offered to give him Uganda, for Herzl found his greatest support among the East European Jews who had been suffering persecution and pogroms at the hands of the Russian Tsar. With these East European Jews as a base, he began to organize the movement which became known as the World Zionist Organization. In 1892 he called a meeting of the World Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland, at which meeting he was elected president of the organization. His suggestion of a Jewish homeland in Uganda was met with such bitter opposition by the delegates that it threatened the very survival of the movement. Finally, the delegates rejected the idea of any place other than the dissensions and divisions among socialist Zionists, religious Zionists, and secular Zionists soon made a battleground of the Zionist movement, and the personal attacks upon some of Herzl's programs may have contributed to his early death on July 3, 1904. At the time of Herzl's death, Palestine was, as it had been for more than 400 years, part of the Ottoman Empire. Of a population of approximately 700,000, Jews numbering 35,000 resided mostly in Jerusalem and the port cities, and engaged principally in commerce. The remain for centuries there had been no organized Jewish immigration into Palestine except for a small Lovers of Zion movement among Russian Jews in 1882. Notwithstanding the numerical odds presented by a large indigenous Arab population, the early Zionists intended to establish an undivided Jewish hegemony over the entire territory of Palestine. They recognized the Arab problem but decided it could be solved later, after they achieved their primary objective, a Jewish state. After Herzl's death, the Zionist movement continued its momentum under new leaders, each of these leaders, as we have seen, holding very different ideas and philosophies as to how their common purpose, a completely Jewish Palestine, might best be accomplished. Close street to Herzl's ideas was Chaim Weizmann, who believed that a Jewish homeland could best be established through the power and influence of the British Empire. Consequently, he assiduously cultivated such prominent persons as David Lloyd George, Winston Churchill, and Anthony at first. Zev Jabotinsky was a supporter of Weizmann's British solution but later broke away, to found the movement known as Revisionist Zionism. This movement declared Britain to be the enemy, and laid claim to all ancient biblical lands, including Judea and Samaria. The more extreme element later dominated the movement, and, as described by Perlmutter, they would achieve a black fame as violent terrorists actively fighting the British. Ironically, the legacy of Jabotinsky, as embodied by former Prime Minister Menachem Begin, still lives in Israel today and still wreaks emotional havoc, emphasis supplied. However, the leader who would ultimately have the greatest impact, and be responsible for bringing about the reality of a Jewish homeland and the State of Israel, was David Ben-Gurion, the head of the Socialist Zionist Movement. Although all three heirs to the Zionist movement were united in their devotion to Zionism and admiration of Herzl, they agreed on very gradually, Chaim Weizmann emerged to the forefront of Zionist leadership. His purpose was to reconcile Zionist aspirations with British imperialism. Weizmann cared little for the indigenous Arabs of Palestine. He believed that Arabs and Jews must live separately since, in his opinion, the Arabs would reduce the standard of living of the Jews. He felt that the Jewish settlements would lag if there was cooperation and fraternization among Jews and Arabs. He doubted whether Arabs had patriotic feelings, and saw them as nothing but backward, scheming, deceptive, and untrust. The Zionist movement, as a nationalistic movement, was uncompromisingly committed to these fundamental tenets. 1. Establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Israel, the historical land as the territorial center of the Jewish nation in direct opposition to the 2. Creation of a Jewish majority in Palestine. 3. Separation from the Arabs. In calling for Jewish statehood, and the restoration of Jewish culture, the Zionists sought to establish a clear-cut position isolated from Arab and Muslim cultural values and social structure. The conscious aim was to create an independent and autonomous Jewish national culture and social system in Eretz Israel, which would he fortified by erecting political, economic, social, and cultural walls designed to separate Jews from the Arab population with the advent of World War I in 1914 and the Ottoman Empire's decision to join Germany and Austria-Hungary against the Allies. The first real opportunity came to bring the Zionist dream into reality. A victory for the Allies was expected to result in the dismemberment of the Ottoman Empire, leaving the fate of Palestine in the hands of the victors, Britain, and Britain needed all the help she could get in her struggle with Germany. Britain enlisted the aid of the Arabs against Turkey, and an Arab army under British General Allenby and E. Lawrence of Arabia, achieved spectacular victories in the Middle East, including the capture of Jerusalem. Relying on British assurances, the Arabs had no doubt that their sacrifices and military successes would justify Britain's recognition and support of Arab nationalism. At the same time, however, the British wanted to use the Jews as a wedge against France by creating a British League of Nations mandate over Palestine. They reasoned that this could best be accomplished by reaching an understanding with the Zionist leaders. The result was the famous Balfour Declaration of 1917, which was simply a short note from Anthony Balfour, British Foreign Minister, to Lord Rothschild. It is quoted here in its entirety: "Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you, on behalf of His Majesty's government, the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation." Emphasis supplied. Anthony Balfour. This ambiguous document was the first official recognition of the Zionists' political objectives, and may be said to be the only claim up to that time to the legitimacy of a future Jewish state. However, the Arabs saw in the Balfour Declaration official support for the Jews, and even a promise of an eventual Jewish state within their midst. Indeed, publication of the Balfour Declaration marked the moment that Palestinian Arab nationalism, quiescent but pregnant with possibility until then, took the offensive against the Zionists. The socialist Zionists in Palestine knew the Balfour Declaration for what it was: both a lifeline of legitimacy for the Jews, and an endless and potentially murderous source of enmity between Arab and Jew. In the meantime, as a result of the Russian pogroms of 1905, an additional 20,000 Jews migrated to Palestine, among whom was David Ben-Gurion. To the Zionists, any concession to the idea of dividing the Palestine territory between Arabs and Jews was simply a pretext to be used until the final achievement of Jewish sovereignty over all of Eretz Israel, although a small moderate faction of Zionists thought it possible for Jews and Arabs to live together peacefully in an integrated society. The militant nationalist rejectionists vehemently opposed this theory. Their approach was pessimistic and condescending. Professor Yosef Klausner, a prominent historian of ancient Jewish history at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and eventually a prominent revisionist scholar, argued that the Arabs and Jews were irreconcilable. He saw integration between the two as culturally dangerous, fearing that the Jews would descend from their high culture into the semi-primitive Arab culture. Zev Jabotinsky, at that time second only to Weizmann in the world's Zionist leadership, also saw the prospect of future conflict and struggle, but he, like many Zionist leaders, underestimated the strength and ferocity of Arab nationalism. The Zionist movement and its implications for the indigenous Arab population of Palestine were apparent as far back as 1910, when the Ottoman Empire announced its opposition to new Jewish settlements. Well before 1914, the Arabs were very aware of Zionist aims to take control of their country and voice their adamant opposition to the Jewish plans for new settlements. From the start, the Arabs distinguished between foreign Jews, meaning Zionist European, and the indigenous Ottoman Jews, a small number of whom had shared Palestine with the as previously noted. The roots of the Arab-Zionist conflict interdated the Balfour Declaration, but when the declaration was actually made, the Arab resistance solidified in the form of Palestinian Arab national